and for the load I bear. This man in his first state is wise. He blenches neither at the brandished spear, nor at the clashing armor of the serried foe, nor at the din of the stricken city. This man in his second state lacks knowledge, fearing for his own concerns. He pales at every sound. Any cry is taken for the battle shout and overthrows him. The slightest disturbance renders him breathless with fear. It is the load that makes him afraid. Select anyone you please from among your favorites of fortune, trailing their many responsibilities, carrying their many burdens, and you will behold a picture of Virgil's hero, fearing both for his child and for the load he bears. You may therefore be sure that you are at peace with yourself when no noise readies you, when no word shakes you out of yourself, whether it be of flattery or of threat, or merely an empty sound buzzing about you with unmeaning din. What then, you say? Is it not sometimes a simpler matter just to avoid the uproar? I admit this. Accordingly, I shall change from my present quarters. I merely wish to test myself, and to give myself practice. Why need I be tormented any longer? When Ulysses found so simple a cure for his comrades, even against the songs of the sirens. Farewell. Letter 57. On the Trials of Travel. When it was time for me to return to Naples from Baiae, I easily persuaded myself that a storm was raging, that I might avoid another trip by sea. And yet the road was so deep in mud all the way that I may be thought nonetheless to have made a voyage. On that day I had to endure the full fate of an athlete. The anointing with which we began was followed by the sand sprinkle in the Naples tunnel. No place could be longer than that prison. Nothing could be dimmer than those torches which enabled us not to see amid the darkness, but to see the darkness. But even supposing that there was light in the place, the dust, which is an oppressive and disagreeable thing even in the open air, would destroy the light. How much worse the dust is there when it rolls back upon itself and, being shut in without ventilation, blows back in the faces of those who set it going. So we endured two inconveniences at the same time, and they were diametrically different. We struggled both with mud and with dust on the same road and on the same day. The gloom, however, furnished me with some food for thought. I felt a certain mental thrill, and a transformation unaccompanied by fear, due to the novelty and the unpleasantness of an unusual occurrence. Of course, I am not speaking to you of myself at this point, because I am far from being a perfect person, or even a man of middling qualities. I refer to one over whom fortune has lost her control. Even such a man's mind will be smitten with a thrill, and he will change color. For there are certain emotions, my dear Lucilius, which no courage can avoid. Nature reminds courage how perishable a thing it is, and so he will contract his brow when the prospect is forbidding, will shudder at sudden apparitions, and will become dizzy when he stands at the edge of a high precipice and looks down. This is not fear. It is a natural feeling which reason cannot rout. That is why certain brave men, most willing to shed their own blood, cannot bear to see the blood of others. Some persons collapse and faint at the sight of a freshly inflicted wound. Others are affected similarly on handling or viewing an old wound which is festering, and others meet the sword stroke more readily than they see it dealt. Accordingly, as I said, I experienced a certain transformation, though it could not be called confusion. Then at the first glimpse of restored daylight, my good spirits returned without forethought or command, and I began to muse and think how foolish we are to fear certain objects to a greater or less degree, since all of them end in the same way. For what difference does it make whether a watchtower or a mountain crashes down upon us? No difference at all, you will find. Nevertheless, there will be some men who fear the latter mishap to a greater degree. Though both accidents are equally deadly, so true it is that fear looks not to the effect, but to the cause of the effect. Do you suppose that I am now referring to the Stoics, who hold that the soul of a man crushed by a great weight cannot abide and is scattered forthwith because it has not had a free opportunity to depart? That is not what I am doing. Those who think thus are, in my opinion, wrong. Just as fire cannot be crushed out, since it will escape round the edges of the body which overwhelms it, just as the air cannot be damaged by lashes or blows, or even cut into, but flows back about the object to which it gives place. Similarly, the soul, which consists of the subtlest particles, cannot be arrested or destroyed inside the body, but, by virtue of its delicate substance, it will rather escape through the very object by which it is being crushed. Just as lightning, no matter how widely it strikes and flashes, makes its return through a narrow opening, so the soul, which is still subtler than fire, has a way of escape through any part of the body. We therefore come to this question, whether the soul can be immortal. But be sure of this, if the soul survives the body after the body is crushed, the soul can in no ways be crushed out, precisely because it does not perish. For the rule of immortality never admits of exceptions, and nothing can harm that which is everlasting. Farewell.
Tim Ferriss again, the producer of this audiobook series. Pardon the interruption, but what follows is a very strange letter. Seneca is usually concrete, relatable, and very tactical. For most people, letter 58, titled On Being, is none of these things. Still, it's here because we want you to have the complete experience, of course. Just be forewarned that Seneca goes a bit off the reservation. I found it kind of jarring and wished I'd had a warning, hence this short note. You might think of letter 58 as Seneca on mushrooms, and not the culinary kind. If not your thing, feel free to skip to letter 59. That's what I usually do. And there's another abstract letter coming up in letter 65, titled On the First Cause. Please feel free to skip that letter, or any letter, for that matter, that doesn't strike your fancy. With all that said, enjoy.
Letter 58. On Being. How scant of words our language is, nay, how poverty-stricken, I have not fully understood until today. We happened to be speaking of Plato, and 1,000 subjects came up for discussion, which needed names and yet possessed none. And there were certain others